Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham. Last time we thought a bit about different religions and how they compare with Christianity in a number of different ways. Today we wanted to add to that conversation by beginning to talk about how we can open up conversations with people of different beliefs. It's Kebab Gate in the Sunday Roundup, and we reflect a little on the lessons of the year in our news item. Enjoy the podcast, I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
My name is Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Well, you join us on what's going to be the final episode of Ordinary for 2020. We're not doing like a dedicated Christmas episode, so actually we need to have our Christmas chat now because we've got a packed show coming up. Actually, there's no time for Christmas talk during the main bit. There's no time for it during the Sunday roundup, you know. I haven't got time for Christmas, so let me hear about your thoughts about Christmas now. Are you looking forward to our carols? There's time for Christmas, but it's now. Are you looking forward to the carol services? What are your Christmas Day plans? Are you going to have some nice food and some presents? And what's going on?
Yes.
Yes to all. Let's do the next picture.
Small scale within the ever-decreasing circles the government is allowing. We are working within those. And
ideal.
It'll be a nice time. But I think just like for everyone, it'll be different. Not so much interchange. Normally you have a kind of one set of family, then you have another set of family, and then you have a set of friends that you meet up with, and then you do something different for New Year with maybe sometimes a different set of people. I think all that has gone away, which is tolerable, but it'll just make it all a bit more low-key.
It is going to be more of a low-key Christmas,
which might be a good thing. Might mean you concentrate on sort of what it's about, although Christmas is about all those other things as well. But it might give us a better focus on the birth of Christ and so on.
Indeed. And I guess by the time this goes out, we will still have our carol service coming up. But so you could probably still promote it. Or at this point, is it completely sold out at this point, or is there still space?
Yeah, a few tickets for the 8 p.m. left, about 20 tickets for the 8 p.m. There's waiting lists on the other two, though. So.
Okay, cool.
We are very excited by that, very excited by the numbers. I think probably it means at the moment we've got over 300 cars. Would that be right, wouldn't it, if there's about 80? So about 300 cars coming through. We reckon that's probably close to 1,000 people, if you average around 3 pounds, about 900 folks, which is probably a greater number than we've ever had in any of our carol services before, with most of those being people we don't know, unchurched. We're excited at the opportunity to be able to proclaim the gospel in this way, and this is one of those kind of things of COVID, isn't it? How the Lord is using opportunities that we would never have thought of, we'd have never done.
Do you think that a big why so many? Do you think it's because it's easier and because of the drive-in thing, or do you think it's because people are just really keen to do something, or is it a combination of those? Do you reckon?
I reckon a combination. So I imagine it's not threatening. You're not going into a church building. You maintain your own distance in a sense, so there's no fear of kind of having to, you know, talk with people. In that sense, it's kind of your own little family experience. So that kind of plays into our culture in a lot. But I think also probably there isn't anything much else going on. So all the things that people would normally be doing, they're not. I think for us, we'll see how it goes and we'll kind of wait out. You know, do you try it again next year? Maybe it becomes a marker, you know, because people will go, oh, that was good fun and it wasn't that threatening and, you know, we enjoyed that. And it's a way in that actually the Lord uses over time to draw people in. Who knows?
Mark, what's your favourite Christmas song this year so far?
Oh, so far.
What have you been listening to the most?
To be honest, I've been listening to, I do like a little bit of Michael Bublé, It's Christmas. And my favourite Christmas CD outside of the Christian sphere is of course, you know, Nat King Cole, Dean Martin, Christmas Time. Love those classics. But great I have ones. Been listening to the Wren Collective's new Christmas album, which has okay. been really good. And some of Chris Tomlin's old Christmas albums, which have got some great songs on. Some that I think you've sung for us at the carols. But
possibly.
Yeah.
Graham, what have you been listening to? What's your favourite Christmas banger?
Oh, I haven't been listening to much Christmas
what?
Stuff.
What? Come perfectly on! Honest.
I did listen to the
it's
new
Christmas.
King's Kaleidoscope album came out. Zeal, I think it's called. I've listened to that. It has nothing to do with Christmas, really.
No, and also it's been out for quite a while, but nice one.
No, they did some sort of launch or something.
Like a live...
Live okay, performance.
Okay,
something.
Yeah, they did do a live.
But it came out in 2019, didn't it?
I think it's been out a while.
Well, how long has it been out? Anyway, however long it's been out, I've caught up with it. It's not quite as bad as like 10 years ago or something.
No,
it's during
no,
this great. Year, isn't it?
You're there, Graham. You're kind of hip-hop and trendy.
Well, cutting edge.
Yeah, sort of. So yeah, I'm a listener. I actually don't like Christmas music, particularly not this year. So.
Right, I'm shutting you down. We're moving on to the next section before you ruin everyone's Christmas.
Sunday roundup show. Did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's roundup time. What do you know?
So, how much did you get paid by Ephesus for Sunday morning sermon, Graham? I've been wondering what kind of sponsorship deal you've cut.
You've got to explain that, Josh,
well,
I think.
I certainly like the guys there. They're always very friendly, and they've got a nice application that means you can actually order at home and then just go
can
in.
Can you?
They do. So
well, that's good to know.
It's really good, yeah. Yeah. For anyone who wasn't listening to us on
we
Sunday or watching
game.
Us, yeah, I was talking about grace upon grace, which is mentioned in John's Gospel, and gave the illustration of how generous and luxurious kebabs are, and got into that enthusiastically. To be fair to me, I got into the theology as well with equal enthusiasm and gusto.
100%.
That's fair.
Inevitably, people kind of latched onto the kebab thing, and Josh made a little jokey thing, a little graphic about it, and someone's done a little sample of the video.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do love kebabs, and I think they are luxurious. And there's something about when I was eating one in the week that I thought, this is just like the concept of grace upon grace. To be honest, when I preached this a few years ago, I did a Nigella Lawson illustration, and I thought,
I see.
Oh, it's all a bit middle class and sort of, you know, posh. You know, she's talking about luxurious kind of, you know, throwing on loads of salt and sugar and whatever it is, you know. And I thought, I need something, you know, that's more like, you know, normal people's lives.
Yeah,
kebabs. I mean, to be honest, you've inspired us, you know. So my youngest came home saying he wanted a kebab. Now, he also got the grace upon grace point as well. So to be fair, it wasn't totally lost and it's connected in that. But we're now having to have kebabs on Saturday night. So I just want to thank you, Graham.
Well,
I haven't had a kebab for a long time.
I've heard that Ephesus stock share price has gone through the roof, I think.
Well, to be honest, I confess I've never been to Ephesus. So I'm looking forward to the experience now. I know there's an app as well and kebab.
Yeah, there is an app.
The question is, you know, having it on the Saturday night, will it strain the system for the Sunday? That's my only fear.
That's a little bit of extra added bonus for people who are going, you know. Well, it's another element of surprise.
It's a bit of an onslaught on the old tummy. But
it is.
It's a lot of protein, which kind of gets
and
you
a blood. Lot of salad.
It's not like having an Indian the night before, though, which is slightly more high risk.
Yeah, sure. I guess it's more that the thing with a doner kebab, I think, is you've got to feel a little bit like it's kind of made you feel a little bit bad, because otherwise it's not, you know,
there's
no point in having it. You know, it's the fact that it's not healthy and you kind of feel a little bit, ooh, afterwards. So that's what makes a good doner, I think.
Yeah.
I think what was also
that,
positive...
That good sick.
Apart from
that,
good, the good,
that kind of, ooh, yeah.
Apart from the good theology, it was just good that people found it amusing and felt comfortable enough to take the mickey out of me, which I think is always a good thing.
Yeah,
it's a sign of affection and love.
It keeps you humble as well, you know, makes you think, oh, no, I go too bit far with that. So it's all good. It's all
amazing.
Good stuff.
It's good.
Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
Well, seeing that it's the end of the year and we've had quite a year, I thought it would be nice to have your thoughts on things that you've kind of major lessons that you've learned this year or big reflections, I suppose, from the year, things that you're looking forward to next year and encouragements as well from this year. So I don't mind who goes first. What have been the things that you've sort of struck you this year, the things you think have been major lessons?
Yeah.
I'm going to choose you now. Go on, Graham.
Yeah, I think I've appreciated how much I appreciated gathering together as church more than I thought I did. So I think I've learned how important church is, I've learned how church can survive remotely, but it's quite a strain. So I think, the importance of the gathering has really been kind of reinforced. Lots of kind of negative but useful lessons, like how selfish I am and how selfish most other people are too, but particularly me. And it comes out in ways through COVID, I think, in different ways, because it challenges lots of things with the inconvenience of it and the claustrophobia of it kind of pushes you to the limits at times. So I think it's good, bad, bad in that you probably react badly sometimes, but good that you kind of discover that about yourself.
Mark, how have you felt about that?
I agree with Graham, particularly on that, the sense of the importance of church. I think the sense of the gathering has been huge for us. And actually the loss of singing, and actually the importance singing plays within our gathered services. Conversely, though, it's caused us to do things that we might not have done in terms of the gathered. So we're probably doing more said prayers than we would ever have done. So there's been other things that have kind of helped us to rethink. We've had to rethink through, how we think of communion and what we do with that as a gathered. So there's positive that. I think that, the sense of God's sovereignty and his purposes, particularly as we preach through the book of Job, has really been underlined. personally, it's that whole sense, isn't it, of kind of working, again, like Graham, your own selfishness is exposed in all of this, but I think also the importance of family, of keeping in touch with people. I think outside of the gathering, I think that's what's really struck me is the importance of the gathering, but actually that church is more than just the gathering on a Sunday morning or a Sunday evening. And I think part of the trend, I think over the years we've seen, is that people love the gathering. They come together on a Sunday, and for some that's it. And actually, I think what we begin to see is actually the importance that actually being a church family means being connected through the week. It means caring for others. It means being other-centered. And I think in the busyness of life, we forget that and we struggle to do that. And actually, COVID has slowed us down to begin to see actually there is the relational side of church, that being the body, being a family, what really matters alongside that importance of gathering together on a Sunday.
What's that coming over the hill? Is it the main bit? Is it the main bit? Will we get copyright sued because of this jingle? This little jingle? What's that coming over the hill? It's Graham Nichols. It's Graham Nichols. Mark Fentham's coming as well.
So last week we thought about how some of the major world religions compare to Christianity in terms of sort of numbers of believers, core beliefs, some of the similarities and differences that there are. And today we're going to get a little more practical as we discuss how you might begin to speak with people who have different belief systems. And I thought that just as a sort of a way to start, although this question will change based on where you are, where you're listening to us, for us guys here in Hayward's Heath in sort of mid Sussex, what kind of other belief systems are you likely to run into most regularly?
Yeah, I mean, Hayward's Heath is fairly cosmopolitan, but not anything like any of the big cities.
Has Hayward's Heath ever been called cosmopolitan?
It is kind
in
of
any, in any conversation.
It's not quite as provincial as you'd imagine. There's a very useful website, datashine.org.uk, which I don't have shares in, like I don't have in Ephesus, but it's really useful for knowing demographics, health situation, but also religion and nationalities in an area from the recent census. So of course you've got sort of ones and twos and everything, but there's a significant portion of Muslims who live in the area, including those who run Ephesus actually, who we engage with a little bit when we did some Muslim evangelism discussions, greater understanding discussions, I think they were called, a few years ago. But probably there are, not probably, almost certainly there are more Hindus, because more Indian backgrounds. Some of the Indians who are living in the area would be Catholics, or some of them evangelical Christians who are in our own fellowship, but quite a few Hindu background as well. And that's, if you kind of look at kind of heat maps of the area, Hinduism is stronger than Islam in Hayward's Heath, Cookfield, Skene Sewer sort of area.
Yeah, yeah. And then I suppose, Mark, the Catholic presence here and the JW presence here?
Well, yeah, so interesting, you know, if you look at Deutsche Schein, they labour Christian, presumably, which includes the Catholic and
Possibly, definitely,
the Jehovah Witness. And then you kind of see that actually you're kind of looking at 80% would identify in one of those ways.
Yeah.
And there's a very strong Catholic presence within Hayward's Heath. So a very strong
church
Catholic
church. Really
well
attended.
You know, you only have to drive past on a Sunday to see the number of services in normal time. So that would be the... And I think there's a strong Jehovah Witness presence as well in the Heath, often... very prominent at the station, in the town, door-to-door knocking. So they're probably Catholics, JWs are probably more who you're going to bump into. But, I mean, you know, there is a mosque in Hayward's Heath as well. So, I mean,
So as we start to think about how we might engage with people who have a different belief system, I think perhaps what people might initially think, what something I initially think as well, is I don't quite know what to say because I haven't done some great amount of research into their own beliefs or into Islam or into Hinduism, so I don't quite know how to engage. Is that really important? What comes first? Talk about the kind of idea of relationship building before we go into some big debate or research into someone else's belief system.
Yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally the best preparation for any evangelism is knowing the gospel. So as long as you understand your own religion, you know, that's fundamentally it. But of course, it helps to know some other things about other religions, and it means you can more quickly perhaps get to a discussion. But really, no one should feel intimidated. If you understand Christianity, you kind of know enough. And I think that kind of speaks to the sort of first area we were talking about last week, about kind of relational polemic and sort of declarative. And really, for ordinary people who are not sort of, you know, they don't have some platform to preach and speak sort of into conferences or whatever about it, or engage in national debates. For most of us ordinary Christians, it's about a conversation with somebody sometime. And that's in the context of you know, exchanging with them, buying a kebab, getting a taxi, or forming a relationship because we're at school with them, or we're at college with them, or we're working with them, and all those things. So it's a conversation, and my encouragement in those conversations is not to say, I know about your religion, here we go with my, you know, 1, 2, 3 knockout points. It's just understand what they understand about their religion, which then gives you time to reflect either in that conversation or later on what you might say kind of helpfully into that. But it's about forming a relationship of trust and so on, because most of us don't have the opportunity to declare in a joined up way, you know, a 10-minute talk to our Muslim taxi driver or colleague at work. It's more a conversation. So it has to be in the context of a relationship, I think.
And it's worth, you know, in that, isn't it? It's because, as within Christianity, there's going to be those who would identify as a particular religious group, but they're not particularly religious, you know. So they, you know, someone might say I'm a Catholic, but actually rarely attends or even knows what they believe. Similarly, with probably not so much more with Islam, but there'll be a scale within that. Similarly with Hinduism. So I think it's worth just, you're trying to, just because someone says I'm a Muslim doesn't necessarily mean that they are, you know, engage in all the theory, that, you know, the theology, understand it all. You know, it may just be a cultural marker. It may just be, you know, that's in a similar way it is for Christianity. For many, you know, they'll say, I'm a Christian. You know, what does that mean? I go to church at Christmas. You know, I think it's just worth unpicking that as well. And that's where being curious, I think, in terms of asking questions and trying to work out what they actually believe and understand. Because there's spectrums within all of those things.
Yes. And so I hear you saying that, you know, it's worth just asking a lot of questions early on in those conversations so that you have a handle on what the person you're talking to actually believes, rather than sort of fighting a caricature or firefighting where they don't believe something and you're sort of wasting your breath and your energy and not understanding where they're coming from. I guess what sort of, how might that conversation look in reality? What sort of questions would you be asking in those situations?
I think it's great to ask about kind of what the religion means to them, or kind of how it connects. And I think it's a reasonable question, not to say, are you nominal, but to say, sort of, you know, how does it connect with your life? You know, does it change how you behave, and does it change how you think? So some sort of more general high level questions to get the level of engagement, because it might be they say, well, not really, it's just something my family do, and then you've probably got a conversation that's more like talking to someone who's not a Christian but not any other religion. Or they might say, oh no, it's really important to me, and then, you know, you could sort of ask around why. But then I think it goes on to questions about God and questions about salvation. Sometimes questions about scriptures, like, you know, what's your authority, but asking questions about God, you know, what does your religion, or how you understand your religion, kind of tell you about God, what kind of God or gods? So questions around that, and then questions around kind of how do you perform this religion in order to achieve something? You know, what do you need to do? How does it kind of work for you? And go on.
Well, I just think you can kind of at the beginning of each of those questions, or at least at the beginning, just say, like, oh, actually, I'm a Christian.
Yeah, sure.
I'm interested in what your views are. Because naturally, then, as you ask questions, the way conversations work is that they'll go, oh, so how does that work for you? How's that different? Which gives you a kind of conversational way of kind of being able to express, you know, oh, you know, what is the basis of how to get to heaven for you guys? You know, what's the basis for you? You know, that's how conversation works, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think then specifically when you're in conversation with say a Hindu who would almost certainly believe in a series of gods and reincarnation, all those things, I think being curious, because I've discovered I've got sort of half a knowledge of those things, and the more I've talked to some people recently, I've thought, oh, that's how they think of it, and so just understanding more where the authority comes from, because otherwise you'll just end up sort of demolishing the wrong arguments, really. And then, you know, when it comes to Islam, thinking when they talk about God, thinking, well, what kind of a God is he? Is he a personal God to you? Sort of like, could he be your friend? You know, what's he like? And then inevitably, it's worth asking rather than assuming. What do you actually think about Jesus? And that they'll probably say what Muslims generally think about Jesus, but they might say something slightly different. And then you understand what you're kind of up against.
And I think it's worth saying, look, no one expects you to be an expert on every other religion. You know, they're not. Most people that we talk with, conversation friends, those we bump into, are not experts. The guys who come to the door, you know, they're trained to do, you know, that they've been. But majority are not experts. They probably have as much of understanding of Christianity as we do of Islam or Hinduism. So, you know, I think in all those things, it is just being curious. It's just a natural way of doing that.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, yeah. So just to underline, it's like a totally legitimate witness, isn't it? And valuable thing to just ask questions like that and talk about what you believe. But if you were to take it, I guess, a step further and wanted to sort of have an understanding and ask some pointed questions, particularly of the, I guess, core main religious beliefs that you might run into here, what could we have some ideas from you about that, like what these people might believe and what questions we could ask to start a conversation on a particular track? So I don't know if you want to take it sort of a group at a time, or I'll let you just decide how to answer that.
I mean, I think going further with the salvation question, you can, particularly with Muslims, sometimes getting to a bit of a rabbit hole to do with Jesus arguments, which are really, really important to us, obviously.
And but why is that? Why is Jesus?
Because
so
they would
critical?
Say Jesus is a prophet, and that he didn't actually die on the cross, and certainly didn't die as a substitute for sins, you know, and rise again, and that's sort of core of what we believe. So it's really, really fundamental.
Yeah.
Why I call it a bit of a rabbit hole is in the sense that there's probably other things useful to talk about sort of before that. and there has to be a shift in what they see as their authority before they're going to accept an alternative view about Jesus. Whereas I think talking about, so what does salvation look like? What what does being religious achieve for you? What does it do for you? What does it get? Paradise, and what's that like? And what's the benefit of being there? But also, how do you get there? And normally, you sort of uncover a trail of some kind of moral
duty.
Thank you. Duty in order to get there, in kind of all religions. So you get to this kind of moral duty argument. So they might not kind of argue like that. And with Islam, there's a degree of forgiveness, and with Hinduism, there's a degree of apathy. I don't know amongst the gods, but there is some kind of moral standard that sort of gets you there, or might get you there. And I think it's tapping away at does that really work? You know, are you really good enough? And also tapping away at the sort of sense of is a kind of God are you good enough for that kind of God, and who sets the moral standards, and where's your authority and stuff like that. It is fruitful to talk around that, I think, and to do with are you actually assured that you're going to get there? Because I think those are more sort of personal, and you know, to do with sort of core. I mean, obviously Jesus' core belief to us, but it's more to do with kind of what people's expectations are of the religion that they're that they're involved in, and it might allow you to say some other things, which I might say in a minute.
And I think that issue is true of every other religion in the sense.
Yes.
And so, you know, the big distinctive, isn't it, is the kind of the old do done. You know, everyone else is all about doing, and Christianity is about it's being done for us. And I think just even having those kind of simple ideas in our minds as we talk with other religions just helps us to kind of be clear. And we've said it in other podcasts, but in one sense, you're not going to win the whole conversation, win the whole person over in one conversation. What you are trying to do is put a kind of little stone in their shoe that makes them think. And, you know, even just by kind of, you may just asking those questions of how are you assured? How do you know you're good enough? Just may start a process in someone's thinking that just goes, well, actually, how do I know? And what you're saying, you are utterly assured. Yeah, I'm absolutely assured that I'll be in heaven. You know, how do you know that? You know, it just opens up avenues, and who knows where the Lord will take it in that. But I think that's the kind of that's the big distinctive. You know, every other religion is all about done. I mean, the other big one is, you know, God coming down. Everyone else is about working towards, we're coming, you know, all those kind of ways are just helpful things in our minds to have when we're kind of engaging.
It does seem like a cliche, but it is actually true. You know, you kind of think you get taught that in Christian circles that is, but actually when you boil it down, there isn't another substitutionary atonement religion where God intervenes in that way. There just isn't. You know, it's not just like we're trying to pretend that we're different to all other religions. We fundamentally are. But it's how you get to that point. And I think it's by just trying to tap into people's hopes and fears, because in the end, that's what it's about. What are they hope for? What are they afraid of? You know, what's driving any kind of morality? Do they hope for some kind of heaven, paradise, karma, whatever it is? You know, what does it mean to them? Are they confident they're going to get there? And I think within that, the sort of second thing of declaring sometimes, just saying, this is what I believe. So not even always arguing for it, but just saying, you know, well, this is what I believe. This is my hope. This is why it works. This is how it works for me. This is where my authority is. So just making simple, you'd call them declarative statements, but they're just statements of what you believe, really. You know, maybe one a week, not 300 a day. You know, depends on the relationship, of course. But, you know, not feeling like you have to get everything out there and explain the whole gospel story in one go. You know, it might be one day there's just a simple point about authority, or there's a simple point about morality, or just a simple point about Jesus or your personal relationship with Jesus, or simple point about prayer life, or about, you know, what's the most good thing about heaven. And I'm all for just simple statements that maybe just hang there, and they're not everything, and in God's goodness you might just pick up on it at a later date.
And if possible, I think attach that to a story, you know, of how that's made a difference in your life. So it's not, you know, there's a declarative truth, but actually how that plays out in your everyday life, you know, in a couple of sentences, because that's where the difference is made, isn't it? People see it worked out.
And I suppose, like, generally speaking, although there are links between people of faith because they believe in sort of transcendence and things like that, you could use most of this stuff in a conversation with somebody who doesn't believe in any deity or anything at all, right? That those questions about, you might frame them differently, but those questions about what do you hope for, what's the equivalent of secular salvation, I don't know, where are you going, what's the point of life, like, those are the same questions, they're just framed differently, and probably what we talked about today is applicable in that way.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely in the era of hopes and fears. And COVID has kind of brought that out. You know, what you hope for is salvation is getting out from under COVID. And the fear is death, really. Death and disease. But which pretty much is the case all the time, but it's kind of suppressed. And, you know, the hope is either an earthly salvation of, mostly an earthly salvation of a sort of way of life. So whether you're, you know, completely hedonistic or whether you just want, you know, your family life back, which is just another form of hedonism, it's all about my salvation is having a pleasurable, satisfied life. That's what I hope for. What I fear is that being taken away. And there's all kinds of morality that comes into that. I mean, COVID has been a fascinating morality story of people's moral judgments of other people.
But also, very few people believe there's nothing when we die.
Yeah.
Most people have a hope of something. And most people's premise of that is, I'm good enough and others are bad enough. And in one sense, that there's the core of that. And actually, the hope of the Pharisee and the tax collector, and how Jesus says, actually, the people who know they're bad enough are the ones who get to heaven. It's not the ones who think they're good enough. And I think just simple, taking to a simple story like that in Luke 17, it's just helpful to, well, it's interesting, this is how Jesus sees it. What do you make of that?
It's probably worth saying next year in our church we're going to try and encourage just thinking more again about evangelism. It's always a theme you have to keep coming back to, because we always just kind of retreat back into our own circles again. So although it seems like it was only a few years ago that we were doing it, you just have to keep coming back to it.
Mm-hmm. And we're excited by that.
And you could go back and listen to apologetics episodes of Ordinaire if you wanted to
absolutely
equip yourself further in these conversations.
Definitely could. I think we have some new listeners. Some other people have asked me about Ordinaire recently, so we might have new listeners, so we encourage them to go back.
We do.
New
There's
listeners.
Many.
Must be Christmas.
Well, it's been a good year for Ordinaire podcasts. It's been a tough year, but we've been there, you know, with our podcast every single week. We're going to have 2 weeks off, but we will be back in January with more episodes.
Will it be season 3 in January? Or is it a
I
new
don't really
season?
Know. We're very arbitrary with our seasons,
I know.
Aren't
is
we?
It a new season or is it not? I
We'll decide in January, shall we?
Wait,
the day
wait
after
and see.
We record it. Yeah, we'll wait and see. But Merry Christmas, gents. I will
and
be
you,
seeing
Josh.
You again, but Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to our listeners. And yeah, until next time.
Until next time.
Well, thanks for joining us for this last podcast of the year. We hope you enjoyed it. Do get in contact with us, ordinary@cchh.org.uk. Let us know your feedback on this series so far and things that you might like to have in the podcast in the new year, whether that's guests, questions, topics, anything like that. Come back in January. There'll be more new episodes of Ordinary. See you then.